some here have been there. Mike, Sharon, have visited the site in Washington State, so they're familiar with it. But it has a lot to do with what we were saying in Genesis 1 through 11 about the age of the earth. There are studies ongoing. This happened in 1980, just 37 years ago, and they have really been at it. All the scientists studying what has occurred since that terrible eruption in May of 1980. And we'll get to that at the end. I want to just show you some of the things that occurred. There's a location in Washington State, and the date, May 18th. By the way, it was on a Sunday morning when this eruption occurred. They had been watching it, not knowing exactly when it would occur. Thought that it would maybe by the end of that century, the 20th century. But it came a little bit earlier. And there were people on the site watching that. Several of them didn't leave and died in the process of watching it. But you can see where Mount St. Helens is, just in the state of Washington and near Oregon as well. And this is a fallout from the ash, the tremendous explosion that occurred from all of these states, about seven states all the way down to Oklahoma. Here are just some that I pulled up so that it would be a good introduction to the study. 100 miles from Seattle and 50 miles from Portland, Oregon. It was, before the explosion, the eruption, 9,677 feet high. It blew the top 1,300 feet off that mountain. So that tells you something about the extent of that explosion. It was one of the deadliest volcanic eruptions in the U.S., and they scaled these volcanoes on a scale of 0 to 8. And even as bad as when it was only a 5. You don't want to see a 7 or 8. It would wipe out vast areas of population and even affect the entire planet, as this one did. 57 people were killed. Many of these chose to stay. Others were workers. 250 homes destroyed and over 200 miles of highway. I have some slides showing just the blast that occurred when the volcano erupted. It was declared 2 years later to be a national volcanic monument, and they have built beautiful sites where you stand and view it from a distance. 540 tons of ash drifted upward, 12, some say as high as 16 miles. There were aircraft who measured it as well, flying in the area. And then when the ash goes up, it gets in the weather circuit, the air movement, and it took about a month, but the ash actually went around the earth as well. Damages estimated at over $1. For scientific studies, a world-famous natural laboratory. A lot of laboratories are inside buildings. This one's outside. Because of all of the interesting things that are occurring right there at that site since that explosion. Well, there's one of the beautiful sites. And it is snow-capped usually, 9,000 plus feet up. And deep snows. I think they said that there were some measurements of 15 feet of snow at the time of the eruption in 1980. So it's a beautiful sight, as this picture shows here from a distance. Now this one looks like everything is just going vertical, it's going upward, but we'll see some more pictures in a moment that shows the terrible destruction to the mountain itself and how it tore part of the mountain off top. But here begins the vertical ascension of all of these tons of ash. This has to go somewhere, and it falls. Hundreds upon hundreds of animals died because of the ash getting into their lungs. Human beings die generally the same way. By breathing that, it's going to fall rather quickly, as in the case of all volcanic eruptions. There's another picture of it with the fire in the midst of it erupting. By the way, what triggered it before they anticipated that it would erupt was earthquakes. It shook the area, it started, and they saw a bulge on the northwest side of it. You could visibly see it, a huge bulge on the mountainside. And that's where it erupted. But it was stimulated by earthquakes that preceded it. As the bottom says here, this is a photograph taken from Portland, Oregon. And they're seeing that far away, 50 miles away, and you see the extent of it and the mushroom cloud above. This was a tremendous natural disaster, and the result of all of this is has provided scientists with just many opportunities that they would not have otherwise to see what would happen following such an eruption in the sky. Now, these are good photographs. They're before and after to show you the extent of the explosion. And you see the bulge on the top two photographs. Over on the right, you can see it a little bit clearer, that huge just bulge on the northwest side of the mountain. And that's where it's going to erupt. And all of the gases are going to blow the side of that mountain off, the bottom two here, the one on the left first and the one on the right. So it's not only going upward, as that first photograph showed of the ash, but there's a lateral, horizontal explosion as well that will just simply kill anything in its path and for a long distance. Now, there's another picture of the tremendous volume of the ash coming out of that volcano. Now, there's a sight to behold, and that mushroom as it's collecting by weight and getting up above it. It would affect air travel. It affected animal life, all around there. Fortunate that it was in a rather rural area. Heavily populated, many, many more would have died. Now there's the mountain blown off, top of it, the 1,300 feet or so at the top. And that bulge area, you can see it blown apart. And then the beginning of these rivers, the lava flowing, and the canyons that were cut quickly in the aftermath of that. So that just gives you some visual. See how barren it is, too. All the trees are gone already. Just blasted off. And this is providing the ground for these studies that scientists are doing, and it has a lot to do with their dating method, how fast things can occur in an aftermath of such an explosion. By the way, if you want to make a quick parallel in your mind, imagine what happened during the flood. And the water not only coming from above, but coming from where? Underneath. The fissures of the great deep ripping the earth's surface upward. And all of the changes that would have occurred when the flood occurred. Peter said that those who have a uniformitarian view, that all things have continued from the beginning since the creation, he said this they willingly are ignorant of, the flood. And that is a big one. And it helps to explain the features that we see, like the Grand Canyon, for example, the mountains being raised up, oceans themselves holding all of the water that occurred that happened during Noah's flood. Now there's another view and a sketch where you can see where the top of the volcano was going all the way up to 9677 feet and then the new summit at 8365. So 1300 plus feet of rock and soil literally blown off, and then coming out toward me in this shoe shape, all of that northern bulge on the side just literally being ripped apart and outward. There's another diagram of it, just showing the extent of it. And that in and of itself doesn't do justice to the tons of rock, dirt, and ash from the center of the earth coming forward and blowing all of this off. They know the names of people who perish there. There's a man named Reed Burn who tried to get away, waited till the last minute, got in his truck, started off her car, started to go, and of course didn't get very far. That ash starts to fall rather quickly, and remember that it was a lateral blast as well. By the way, they have videos. If you want to go on YouTube, you can see a man, I think he's 83 years old, and they're warning him that it's close and that it's dangerous for him to live there. Of course, he's lived there most of his life in a cabin. And he said no, he wasn't going anywhere. They found his body. He perished under the ash just as it was here. There was a scientist there on post several, I don't know, 100 yards away, but he was at a remote, like that mountainside a while ago, where he was viewing it, recording data. But it happened so rapidly with the earthquake that they were not expecting, that erupted the mountain. And they have not found the body of that scientist to this day. There's another diagram showing the blast here. If you can read some of it up there, it happened at 8:32 a.m. It was on a Sunday morning, and a magnitude of 5.1 on the Richter scale. And the blast going out, as you can see down at the bottom here, 17 to 19 miles as it pushed outward. You can see the volume, the extent of that blast. By the way, I didn't put this on the slides, but I looked at it this afternoon to get the numbers correct. But the energy that was expended here in this eruption was 24 megatons of thermal energy, equivalent to 600 times the size of the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima. 1,600 times the volume. Now, the difference is there's no atomic aftermath that killed so many people as it did in Hiroshima, but it was also in a largely populated area. But this is the force, not necessarily the atomic after result that would kill many, many people, but this one, 1,600 times what happened in Japan. Now, these photographs really show the story of the force of that blast laterally, just literally stripping the landscape here, tearing barks off of trees. All of the bark was just gone, and the limbs were broken off. Trees just sheared, and then all of that ash falling and the lava flowing really did an amazing amount of destruction. There it is, ash falling on top. They look like toothpicks, but these are trees. And the trees are literally just stripped. No limbs, leaves, the bark is gone. And you see the landscape in the aftermath. Now, this is something that was a bit amazing to me. There was a large lake near the volcano called Spirit Lake. Large one. And there are other smaller lakes that were formed as well in the aftermath. But these are the trunks of the trees, the limbs that have been totally stripped and looked like just logs out on the top of the... And this is 12 years later. And what's happened over that time period is trees, of course, are not uniform. One end will be heavier than the other. So as they got soaked with water, they would sink. And one end being heavier than the other, it would become vertical and then stick into that ash and that soft material that was at the bottom of the lakes from the volcanic blast. This is providing some of the background for the scientific studies. What happened here? What happened underneath the water? All of these prime areas for study for the scientists. Sometime later, with the trees that they planted now are coming up. One of the tremendous things they didn't believe was how fast recovery would occur after such a disaster. With all of, you can just see the trees all lying on the ground there, just like sticks all over the place. But now new vegetation sprouting up rather quickly. What you're looking at there is in the center of the crater after the blast. And as other eruptions occurred over a 9-10 hour period, then lava is being pushed upward. And as it's cooling now, this dome shape of lava, an extraordinary amount here, volume here, in this dome that occurred rapidly in the hours following that blast. Here it is again, just from a drawing, and you can see the different layers of rock and strata that form the dome in the center of the volcano. And you can see that it occurred from 1980 and this one from 1986. Over a 6-year period, you have this formation of the dome right in the middle of the volcano in about three or four different layers. And the yellow at the top, the very top one that you saw a moment ago, from 1986. There's another picture of it right next to the crater. And you can see the outer rim of the new crater that's down at 8,300. And here's the dome. Look at it. 4 football fields across. Right? That's 400 yards, Ron. 1,200 feet. So that's 1,200 feet across that dome. That's quite a large dome we were looking at a moment ago. Well, here's some lessons learned. Norman and I and several of you, I remember you being there at Southwest in 2014. Brad Harrob was speaking concerning this, one of his presentations in that series. In his scientific studies. And he said during that presentation that the scientists have learned more in 1 week than in the previous 100 years. Imagine that now. That 100 years will put you back to 1880. And the geologic columns were not developed and presented until about 70 years before that, around 1810. And so here they have learned more in just a few weeks, and now 37 years, they've learned a lot that they did not know before and that has contradicted the assumptions of scientists, especially evolutionists, who say that the Earth has been here for millions and millions of years. Those assumptions are what are being overturned. They made those without having a laboratory outside that they could go measure and see. And they are seeing a lot. Well, one is the dome itself has grown rapidly since the first eruption in 1980, and we saw the measurements of that over a 12-year period. The age of the rock strata were tested by scientific methods of dating and were found to be 2.8 million years old. And they were formed in a very short period of time. This is from Wayne Jackson's material from the Christian Courier, Problems of Evolution. He wrote that in 2003. You can see that that, too, is since this occurred. And he's referring to this event article. Now, these are the things that Brad Harrob presented in his presentation. I had them in my notes, and I will just relate those to you. But here, he used a word, super, S-U-P-E-R, and with an acrostic. Said, here are the things that we have learned from that happening in Mount St. Helens. S stands for strata, or layers of rock, which they said had to be formed over millions and millions of years, and it formed rapidly in the aftermath of this blast, and especially over this 2-year period. And you, Brother Harrob said, upright logs. Just a little memory thing here to remember things by. You, upright logs. On Spirit Lake, the trees were strips. You saw that a moment ago in the slide. Logs floating. And then they turned upright in the midst of the formation of rock strata. And here's what's interesting, is that you have all of these various rock strata dated at different ages with one tree stuck through it all. And the U, therefore, overturns a lot of their assumptions. Then, peak formation. Bark fell from the trees that fell into Spirit Lake, formed peat at the bottom of the lake. And peat is the beginning substance from which coal is formed. Coal being formed after 37 years since the eruption of Mount St. Helens? Absolutely. At the bottom of Spirit Lake. This is astonishing, the evolutionary community, and shocking the assumptions of unbelievers, the ones who deny the biblical accounts. And E for rapid erosion. You saw all those rivers, the canyons that were being cut. There's one called Little Canyon there. It is 1/40th the size of Grand Canyon. It was formed in one day. The Grand Canyon could have been formed in less than a year, the time of Noah's flood, could have been formed in 40 days. And yet you go there and the scientists will be sure to point out to you that it's millions, millions of years old. And this is overturning those assumptions. We are in rapid recovery. Years later, and animals were roaming over that countryside that we saw that was totally devastated. Elk are grazing grass in the area. And they are wrong about these long periods of time needed for these events to occur. They have long assumed coal and oil took millions and millions of years, and therefore the biblical account just cannot be true. And yet they are now having to back off. Coal and oil can form much more rapidly than they ever imagined. Right conditions, but time is not one of them where you have to have millions and millions of years. And now they're learning that that is so. Christians should never be ashamed of saying you believe what is in Scripture. Scripture always has a way of proving itself to be right. Well, there's the aftermath of it all. You see the greenery? See the trees and the shrubbery all down below and the ice, the snow that's on top of the mountain there with this side blown out. Mount St. Helens tells a tremendous story. People like Brad Harum are telling this story wherever they go, across the U.S. and across Europe as well, and telling people the Christian view of a young earth. And that we do not need a pre-Adamic race of people. We do not need long periods of time before the creation, during the creation, or after it. And we covered each of those three very briefly in our study. Well, thank you for being here. Thank you for considering. And this will provide a lot of discussion over the coming years, already has over 37 years. And the scientists are still there. They're still considering this evidence. If you haven't responded to the gospel of Christ, we urge you to do it tonight. We're here prepared, ready to help you. If you haven't obeyed the gospel, you may now, while we stand, sing together.
Have you been to Jesus for the cleansing bar? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are you fully trusting in His grace this hour? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are you washed in the blood, in the soul-cleansing blood of the Lamb? Are your garments spotless? Are they white as snow? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb?
Are you walking daily by the Savior's side? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Do you rest each moment in the crucified? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are you washed in the blood? In the soul-cleansing blood of the Lamb? Are your garments spotless? Are they white as snow? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? When the bridegroom cometh, will your robes be white, pure and white in the blood of the Lamb? Will your soul be ready for the mansions bright and be washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are you washed in the blood, in the soul-cleansing blood of the Lamb? Are your garments spotless? Are they white as snow? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Lay aside the garments that are stained with sin and be washed in the blood of the Lamb. There's a fountain flowing for the soul unclean. Oh, be washed in the blood of the Lamb. Are you washed in the blood, in the soul-cleansing blood of the Lamb? Are you